Welcome to the Food and Drink Business Podcast,
your on-the-go bite
of the food and beverage industry.
Welcome to the Food and Drink Business Podcast, brought to you today by Commonwealth Bank of Australia. My name's Grant McCarran, and today I'm once again joined by Kim Berry, the editor of Food and Drink Business and the most legendary host of this show.
I so am, aren't I?
I know, right?
You know, I'd say I bought snacks, but it would really, it'd be quite selfish because, you know, all of that.
That'd be only in your studio, not mine.
Correct. And I'm quite certain that a lot of people would not appreciate the sound of me chewing throughout the episode today.
Indeed. That ASMR factor would be bad. But Kim, this is the second of the year and getting back into the swing of it all. So how are you doing today and who are we talking to?
Well, after what I think has historically always been the longest month of the year, January apparently has 31 days in it, but I am convinced it's about at least 62.
Yeah. I've had people tell me that it's only 31 days, but they feel like 48-hour days.
They do. Yeah. Even so, we're still at the beginning of the year, and one of the things that we have done in the past and we're going to do again this year is look at the trends that's happening in food and drink and what's unfolding, what we can expect in the sector. And so, of course, we have with us one of the industry's absolute leading lights, the Associate Director for Food and Drink at Mintel, Cormac Henry. Hi, Cormac.
Hi, Kim. How are you?
Very well. Welcome back.
Thank you. Thanks for having us on again. It doesn't seem like that long ago since we spoke to you last.
I know, right? Look, I guess to get us started, I'm thinking there's so much talk about where consumers are at the moment in terms of cost of living crises, that is just sort of smashing up against a lot of the other trends that have really been bubbling away for a while in terms of, you know, more focused on your nutrition, looking for new experiences, wanting a treat but not too big, you know, like trying to do some. So what can you tell, what is Mintel seeing in that space in terms of the impact of, you know, just cost of living and some of the other developing challenges?
Yeah, so for any listeners that maybe don't have an awareness of Mintel or who we are, just to start, yeah, because where are we getting these trends from? You know, who are we to talk on these? So if you have not experienced Mintel before, we're a market intelligence agency and we specialize in tracking essentially consumer attitudes and behaviors across the globe, and also tracking product innovation across the globe. Now, a simple way as to how they both come together, essentially we look at consumer demand, how those lifestyles are changing, and how food and drink brands are catering to those changes through the new products they are launching onto the marketplace. So every year we go away, look at all those speeds, and start to come up with sort of what are the emerging themes for the year ahead. And should just say as well, when we say trend at Mintel, this is always a bit of a continuation of consumer behavior. You know, I think the word trend gets bandied around quite a lot, particularly in the social media age. But when we say trend, we mean sort of a change in behavior over time. And this year, looking at the trends and some of those pressures that you mentioned on consumers, there are three that are emerging that we're going to talk about today. Now, the first one is rural rebellion. And this trend really focuses on, as consumers sort of have all these pressures around them and how they're sort of been told they, you know, should be living their lives and what sort of is seen as aspirational, but can actually be quite tough to achieve, that they are rebelling against that in their food and drink and consuming food and drink as to how they actually want to consume it, not necessarily how they feel they should. And I think what underlines that is really kind of like the paradox of the human existence. So I give you an example, I guess. So maybe you've started the week, you know, you've prepared your lunch for the week, you have it in the fridge at work or working from home, whatever you're doing. Then it gets to, you know, lunchtime, you've had a bit of a rough morning and you're kind of like, oh, actually, you know what? I don't want that healthy, you know, air fried meal that I've made. I've used my double drawer air fryer that I've recently upgraded to, and I'm proud of that. But I'm actually going to go order from a fast food restaurant, go to it or get it delivered, whatever it is. You know, humans are paradoxical creatures, and I think we have to sort of just lean into some of the ways that they're actually behaving when it comes to food and drink, and use that as a base for innovation. I think there've been some cool examples in history of where sort of real product successes have come from sort of looking at almost like mistakes or things that weren't supposed to happen in food and drink. So I think a great example is one from the UK. There's a very famous tale of a sort of a prep school known as Eton. And one day a student was carrying the equivalent of a pavlova, which I believe does have its origins here in Australia. It's claimed by a few countries, but I think Australia has it. And that...
You just lost your New Zealand audience, I think.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah, we'll not. You can both. I think there's enough pavlova to go around. We can both lay claim to it in different aspects.
Yeah.
Stick some manuka honey on it, and then it's, you know, kiwi. Anyway, so the pavlova is then dropped. The panic student scoops it up off the floor and, you know, serves it to the headmaster. And the headmaster goes, "What's this? It's eaten mess," you know? And then the dessert was created, you know? And, you know, however many years on, we now still have that, you know, in retail. So I think that's a great example of where sort of the rules were broken, but actually great things, you know, came from that. And a lot of this trend really dials into how we are consuming now. So we have about 25% of Aussie consumers at the moment who say they snack instead of having regular meals. And that sort of goes up into sort of your 30%. So when you sort of look at that Gen Z millennial cohort. And another way within this rural rebellion is also looking at some of those topics that were perhaps seen as quite taboo before, that we weren't necessarily always talking about how food and drink can help consumers address perhaps changes in their body that come with life that weren't discussed through food and drink. And I know we talked a lot about that sort of last year when we looked at food and drinks brands increasingly talking about how they can support people through the menopause. And again, this year we're starting to see some brands come out and talk more about hormone health as well and how different food and drink products may play into that, with soft claims around this, of course, you know, as expected within sort of the regulatory environment. But I think a really interesting example of that, and this is a product that's a bit more out there, but there is a company called Ancestral Nutrition in New South Wales, and they specialize currently in beef liver supplements. So these are dried beef liver tablets. Yum, yum. Very much a supplement form. If you're into your liver pates and all the rest still, you know, you go for your life. But I think there does tend to be a taste barrier with that, as you've suggested there. But they've actually went one step further this year, and they've launched again, desiccated supplement tablets. These are actually made from bull testicles, and they actually link the sort of natural occurring sex hormones in these to potentially maintaining libido. So some of those things that we weren't talking about before, when we talk about rural rebellion, this is as much about the topics that we are addressing as to how to help consumers, as well as sort of mixing up with formats and different flavors and tapping into new occasions. It's a real spectrum there of rebellion, as it were.
Well, that was a first. I'm not quite sure we've used the word testicles on the podcast before, but now we've done it. We've set the standard to another level. I'm not quite sure what it is, but that what you're talking about is so interesting, isn't it? Because that the time from when we looked at food as sustenance to where we are today, that we look at it in terms, it's not like sustenance is almost down the list. It's how is this good for my mental health? How is this good for my, you know, the planet? Like how it's being made, is that, you know, sustainable? And this quest, I think, for these sorts of products in terms of libido or your aging, I think they're just gaining ground, aren't they, as we have this aging population anyway?
At least, and I wouldn't necessarily say these are definitely some of those products I spoke about. They are still quite niche, Kim. And I think, you know, in terms of how they're positioned, you know, you're going to still have to ladder up to your normal purchase drivers around sort of, you know, taste and quality and, you know, flavor. But I think, as you say, the conversation is more I think, more nuance now in terms of how food and drink can sort of support through different life stages, whether that's aging or indeed managing, I suppose different places that consumers find themselves within their health. And I think that leads quite nicely into our second trend for the year, which is a trend called fundamentally nutritious. Now, where we start this trend is a space that's had a lot of discussion, I think, particularly over the last 6 months. And this is with the introduction of GLP-1 drugs. One of them is called Ozempic out there. Now, a little bit of intro, I guess, on GLP-1, and this is sort of a basic introduction. You know, there's obviously a lot more clinical complexity to it, but GLP-1 drugs essentially were developed to help people managing blood glucose levels. So they basically help the pancreas release insulin. So they're typically prescribed to diabetes patients. However, when these drugs came onto the market, there was then sort of noticed a secondary impact, which was helping users feel full. So they weren't necessarily getting those signals of, I need to eat, I need to have foods. And I think when they looked into that, it's more around to do with sort of the slowing of the stomach emptying and things. But I think people think that's quite far away. But in Australia, sort of GLP-1 drugs previously were being prescribed for diabetes. But as of September last year, they are now legal to be prescribed for weight loss as well. Now, why that's interesting, I think, for food and drink is if we have people on these drugs, they have different appetite requirements. And we've already seen Nestle in the US launch a line called Vital Pursuit, which is marketed towards GLP-1 users, but also those managing sort of their weight more generally. And they very specifically have certain macros on those meals. But the flip side of that, of course, is we have to always look at why we talk about nutrition and the context at which consumers perceive food and drink. Because if we look at a drug like that has, I guess, two sort of, you know, impacts, you know, insulin sort of management and then also satiety, a lot of those things we can also do through food and drink, you know? And actually, when we looked into this, we have a lot of sort of consumers, about 30%, for example, in Australia say that they associate high protein with feeling full. But collectively, when we looked into this across Australia, all food and drink, we only have about 1% of products that were launched in the last couple of years actually talking about satiety on pack. So there's opportunity there to be really talking and sort of, just re-engaging with consumers on appetite management. You know, what foods are making you actually feel full? And I think, currently, for example, if we take something like protein, you know, which is everywhere, but a lot of that conversation tends to be around sort of, you know, muscle maintenance. Like, we don't really talk a lot about satiety when it comes to protein. So it is going to change the landscape a little bit, particularly around sort of satiety and glucose management. So we might sort of talk about foods that are low GI or have, maybe alternative, sugars in them that don't necessarily cause blood glucose spikes, or indeed sort of lower sugar alternatives. This conversation is all becoming, a lot more, I think, people are becoming a lot more informed, right, with these types of drugs out there. If they are a candidate for those, they may be looking to sort of other alternatives through their diet.
Yeah, absolutely. And I find it really interesting when these products or, these drugs come into the market and they're for one purpose, and then they discover that it's effective for something else. And then we have the pendulum swing to that really, far side in terms of reaction and judgment and all the rest. And then we slowly sort of come back to some sort of medium in the middle. But that opportunity is there in that space, isn't it, in that pendulum swing for food and beverage companies to direct the discussion into an opportunity and a productive conversation, not a judgment, but instead going, this is an alternative, or not even an alternative, that if you eat this, you will feel fuller for longer, or, whatever the key message is.
No, I think so, Kim. And I think the judgment side of things too, because I think there can be with, any types of solutions around sort of like weight management, there's, you know, there can be quite this like left and right, discussion. But I think what's great about sort of this discussion becoming wider is we are starting to see now, certain tech companies getting in this space and sort of talking about, I think people's, emotional triggers around eating and like how are they rewarding themselves with food and, bringing light to that conversation and saying, if you are in this space where you're reevaluating your relationship with food, here's gonna be some better options for you, or even with sort of the uptick of blood glucose monitors. I don't know if you've seen people walking around with those. I see a lot more, I think, in Australia, particularly over the last 12 months or so. But those are great because people can, like, first of all, not everyone reacts the same to different types of food. It totally depends on sort of your own body and where you're at with your own health. But they just give little tips and says, okay, well, you've had something sugary, maybe like go on a walk now, for example. That's a great way to sort of bring down your glucose and your body can like process it. So it's really sort of empowering. I think, the personal tech element of this is really important too. So, because again, not everyone's the same. There is this sort of constant health journey that will change as we age and all the rest.
Well, it's that ties into the whole sort of personalization of diet as well, doesn't it? That exactly, we all respond differently, and being able to track that or see data that's actually not a judgment, it's actually a number, and you can go, oh, so that food does that, or is a real. Overused phrase, but it's a real game changer, and it really advances our knowledge and education around what we are eating and the impact that it has on our body. And I don't think anyone can sort of argue that that's not a good thing.
Exactly. It sort of puts a lot of power back in sort of an individual human's hands as well, because, it's like anything, you only know what you know. So it's like, where can I get that information, And then it's just, it allows more freedom of choice, I think, in what people are buying.
Well, and it also shifts the conversation. It shifts the conversation away from one of value judgment and one that fosters guilt or anger or, regret, to one that's, as you said, much more empowering.
Exactly.
It's time to give a shout out to our sponsor, CommBank. As you strive for sustainable growth, CommBank can support you with tailored finance and insights to support every stage of your business journey. With CommBank as your partner, you'll have access to bankers that specialise in the food and beverage industry and insights to stay ahead of the curve, so you can spend more time focused on your business, not your banking. Find out more at combank.com.au/manufacturing.
Products and services provided by Commonwealth Bank of Australia. Eligibility criteria, T's and C's apply. Commonwealth Bank of Australia, ABN 48123 123 124. AFSL and Australian Credit Licence 234 945.
So what's number three?
Yes, so number three is a trend called chain reaction. And this trend looks into how the food and drink industry needs to adapt to the pressures in our supply chain. So, I think particularly over the last 5-6 years, we've seen huge upheavals to our food and drink supply, where that is through, climate-derived disturbances or different sort of geopolitical events across the world, meaning we can't get, certain ingredients. Our food and drink no longer has a path to distribution from where it previously did. And we know, particularly within sort of Australia, we have huge support for consumers around sort of, locally made or locally produced, or they like that sort of local link. And that sort of comes with the territory as an island nation who can produce a lot of our own, food and drink. Obviously, we have huge primary industry in agriculture. So our Aussie consumers are particularly attuned to where their food and drink is coming from. However, I think the main thing is we do need to consider that alongside actually keeping food and drink on our shelves. So sometimes that means that things are not necessarily provided locally, but are imported. And around that, it's about helping consumers, first of all, have that transparency on where food and drink is from. But also, if we are to sort of bring them towards that, we need to be talking about the benefits of both sort of local and imported food and drink. I think a great way to sort of do that is to be laddering into sort of those taste considerations. So I always look at wine as a great example of this. So we have, you know, great Australian wine. We also, you know, have a great wine that we may import from France, for example. And I think what wine does really well is sort of, you know, they talk about their terroir, sort of the growing conditions, you know, of the soil and, you know, even sort of the sun and the moonlight and how that affects the vines. And that's sort of specific to individual regions and then can be linked back to taste. And I think that's where I think the rubber really hits the road in this. We need to be taking sort of our, you know, we have our supply chain logistics, but we need to be bringing it back to the consumer benefit. You know, why is this product in front of me? What's different about it? To sort of build that excitement. And again, this is about giving consumers the freedom to choose as well. You know, it's having that transparency and saying, this offers you X experience, this offers you Y experience, and give them that freedom. There's also, I think, a lot of opportunity here to sort of be thinking about how you're perhaps tiering your ranges around sort of locally made or imported. So I think Bega peanut butter here in Australia is a great example of that. They have a section on their website that talks about where their peanuts are from. So, and they have ranges specifically depending on where the peanuts are from. So their entry level, sort of, you know, Bega yellow top peanut butter we'll be familiar with. That contains 85% peanuts from mixed origin. So they detail there's a mix in there. Some may be Australian, but some may be from Argentina. That particular variant also includes sugar and also some sunflower oil as well. Now, if you sort of go up, I think the price differentiation, oh, I haven't looked at it recently, actually. I think it's about a 50-60 cent jump up to sort of Simply Nuts. And this is a more premium variant for Vega. It's 100% Aussie nuts. And just a little bit of salt as well in it. And that's sort of in a glass jar. It's a bit more of a premium proposition. So I love kind of what they have done and sort of give that transparency around these may be from imported sources. And it's also a slightly different ingredient formulation versus the all Aussie nuts. And it's sort of a cleaner formulation. So it's not just about local or an imported. They've sort of tiered appropriately and sort of thought about the different, I guess, indicators of value for the consumer in those product propositions. And they've been very transparent about that as well.
And that's so clever, because you've then got a consumer, and Bega is the market leader in spreads in Australia. You know, that peanut butters and Vegemite, you know, they're really incredibly strong in that market segment. But to have those two products, you're keeping the consumer within your brand, like within your, so you're not, someone's not looking at a private label brand, like a, you know, a supermarket brand label and a Bega product. They're still looking at two Bega products and going, okay, well, this is in my budget, or no, this is my, or this is my favorite taste, or that's so clever. I mean, I know they do it for a job. I get that, but you know.
It is. It's incredibly clever, Kim. And I will say, this is not something that Bega have, you know, just been doing recently. This has long been the case. But I think, you know, it's one of those examples in market. You know, sometimes you have to look at sort of those, you know, real sort of legacy successful brands and be like, what are they doing? Because often we can learn a lot from, you know, what has been out on market for a number of years. So they're a great example of that.
Yeah. Well done, Bega. So what else is happening?
So those would be our three core trends for this year, Kim. I think sort of the one thing to sort of leave on the message, I think all of these trends are built around paradoxes. You know, as consumers will shift from sort of left to right to the middle. And I think often, like, that's kind of where those real sparks of new innovation can come from. You know, humans aren't just one thing. And I think some of those examples we've talked about today really give the view of sort of the spectrum of human behavior. And I think it's sort of lean into the paradoxes, you know, pull them apart, because often I think that's where the great ideas are coming from in new innovation in food and drink.
Yeah. It's, as always, so fantastic to catch up and get the insights that Mintel is sort of collating consistently over time. And it is, I say this all the time that it's such an interesting time in the sector. But with all of the macro factors that are playing out at the moment, it really is. You know, companies are having these real opportunities to look at these changes in our consumer behaviour, but also look at and how they can access it, whether it is a new product or whether it's sort of revitalising an existing product. And it's always an area that our listeners love listening about and talking about. So thank you so much for coming on today and helping get our 2025 underway.
Thanks so much, Kim. Really appreciate you having us on. It's been great to chat with you.
Well, thanks, Cormac. Thanks, Kim. And of course, thanks to our audience for joining us today. Don't forget, if you enjoyed what you've heard, you can email us with any questions, comments, or suggestions you may have. We do like to get them. And we'll be back in the not too distant future with another informative discussion that will be brought to you by Commonwealth Bank of Australia. But until then, have a great day.
You've been listening to the Food and Drink Business Podcast, produced by Southern Skies Media on behalf of Food and Drink Business, owned and published by Yaffa Media. If you wish to use any of this podcast's audio, please contact us via our website or send an email to editor@foodanddrinkbusiness.com.au. You can subscribe to this podcast via your preferred platform and read all the latest news on Australia's food and beverage industry at foodanddrinkbusiness.com.au.
Production copyright 2025. Things you should know. Guests featured in the podcast are speaking from their personal experiences only. As this podcast has been prepared without considering your objectives, financial situation or needs, you should, before acting on the content, consider its appropriateness to your circumstances. CommBank does not necessarily endorse the views of a particular individual or guarantee the accuracy of the information provided. Any opinions, conclusions or recommendations made are subject to change without notice. Projects and forecasts are based on a number of assumptions and estimates and are subject to contingencies. Commonwealth Bank does not accept any liability for loss or damage arising out of the use of all or any part of the research. The CommBank Manufacturing Insights Report can be found by searching CommBank Manufacturing Insights on the CommBank website. Commonwealth Bank of Australia, ABN 48123123124, AFSL and Australian Credit Licence 234945.
You've been listening to a Yaffa Media podcast.
Southern Skies Media.